All right. We got 6:30 on the dot, or pretty close to. How's everybody doing?
Yep.
Good. Yeah.
Yep, we're in here. I obviously am not the host, but there's a reason I wanted to just gather everybody and speak to a couple things before we start. I wanted to just highlight something specific that really should have been done a couple weeks ago when Sean first had his, in case everybody hasn't noticed, Sean hadn't been on the hosting rotation before, right? He just kind of appeared one day. He kind of just jumped in. The funny thing is that during all that time, though, we absolutely can see, I know Amber and I can attest to it from an Armory standpoint, just from being in a relationship with Sean, that he absolutely is an environment setter, and he absolutely is one who knows how to host, know his presence. And so throwing him into hosting really wasn't just so much of a, like, hey, let's throw you into this thing now, and let's get you involved, right? Not anything like that. But I wanted to intentionally highlight something that, again, should have been done a few weeks ago. Personally, if I could just share, like, my view of Sean is that he already carries himself in such a way that he doesn't need an introduction. But I wanted to make sure that we intentionally circled back to that this week, because there's a purpose beyond just throwing him into the hosting rotation, for him being able to have this platform to speak to all of us. And we know just in the past few weeks with this setup and the aspect of discomfort and what has been exposed and shown through that there's something that's stirring, right? So what I'm getting at basically is throughout the years of Armory, I'm going to kind of bring it in Armory perspective, we always have this thing, we call it a senior center. Sometimes it's a trip, sometimes it's a different intentional thing that we do, sometimes it's words, sometimes it's whatever, right? There's just different things that Yahweh highlights that we want to partner with and send our seniors out from with an Armory perspective and then into the next. And one of those things for Sean really has been the recognition, not on his part, well, before I say that, a big thing for him has been the overall recognition and giving him the place publicly that he has always operated in privately.
Yeah.
When we talk about going through the inspection process and submitting ourselves to something, he is absolutely a man in this house who not only hosts the literal environment, but who is submitted to that process. And it's because of that that he sets an environment versus setting an environment and flipping it the other way, right? So I wanted to highlight that, because one of the aspects of Sean's graduation from Armory, if I could say it that way, in senior sending, has just been being able to give him a platform to sort of put on display what Yahweh's done in him, but also so that we as a family can not even just recognize that and participate in it, but be pressed in it. I can personally attest, and I know Amber could say the same thing, to ways that Sean has absolutely pressed us over time. And it's because of that we're doing this. So I wanted to just intentionally highlight that, because this obviously is a very different setup. It's a very unique way of looking at things. It's a different thing than what we've been used to lately. And there's intention and there's purpose behind that. So I wanted to be able to just sort of set that tone for the family as we recognize what's being done, not just in his voice and what's happening here, but literally what is happening here.
Yeah.
All of it. Okay. Does that all make sense?
Can I just add one?
Yeah.
One of the other things that we were carrying as we send Jonathan from Armory was just that he would be known by the family. And there's pieces of him that I think are so treasured and have been, like they haven't been released to the family yet. And there's a lot of things that Sean carries in who he is and how he operates, how he functions, how he thinks. I know you guys have heard Mom and Dad say that a couple times, of like just the press that he carries in just how he talks, the way he articulates, the way he will like even just pause and think before he speaks. Wherein, like for me, I get uncomfortable, I gotta feel the silence and I gotta like try to fill it up. He's like confident in being able to say like, stop, pause, think what needs to be said, and the way he articulates things is just so full. And I think that there's a lot of things that we haven't understood or been able to see in Sean, and I think that being able to put him, at least in some degree, in front of the family That there's things that we can really receive from him and the anointing that he does carry, and being a brewer in and of himself, like it's just there's facets of what the brewers carry that I think there's just so much for us to learn and gain. And so with Sean, a big part of our heart of like making him do hostings was we wanted to give the family an opportunity to see him in some of the ways that we've been able to see him and the opportunities that we've been afforded within Armory to hear him, to get to know him, to see and to think the way that he thinks and to know that it's just so different than how I think and the value that comes from that because he doesn't think inside a box. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't articulate from a box or needing a platform or needing a position because he's just established. And so I think that there's things that he can just speak to so freely that we can gain, especially in this moment while we're learning to not sit in a position but be postured. Mm-hmm. And he just does that so naturally. And so hopefully we're all learning a lot from him. But just wanted to add that.
When I read the Torah portion this week, it said, don't forget, take care, and be very careful a lot, as well as brought up Amalek and how he attacks the ones who are tired and weary. And that's the same week that my parents are going to be gone, which is... at least when I'm more prone to attack, and I'm sure that's universal. And if I know if I'm not very careful and hyper-vigilant, I'll fall off track, and I could definitely, like, get set on a track that's not good if I'm not super careful this week. So let's carry the Torah portion throughout the whole week. And be extra heightened and being careful with our thoughts and whatever else.
Yeah, it's good. Thank you, Sean.
Thanks, Sean.
And that is a really important tone to set moving from last week into tonight, because so much of what was released last week was really a sense of urgency moving forward because we were given a timeline. So our family's been, we've been a little bit in and out with summertime and, you know, just who's been able to be here, but it's super important that we are connected and consistent as we can be going back through the podcasts and the directives we're being given, because last week, one of the things that we received was a countdown on doors being shut. So when Sean is talking about being heightened and being diligent in your thoughts, it's because Yahweh said in 13 weeks, the door will be shut on A, B, and C. So the wrestling that Yahweh has allowed us to walk in, that door is closing on three specific things that was released at the end of service last week, and it was released after the word was given, which specifically had to do with dwelling, which is when we understand dwelling. And I think it's one of those things that in our journey as a community, Yahweh emphasized from the very beginning the significance of gathering and called it dwelling. But now, just like so many other things, as we go through Torah, there's a new depth of understanding that we're gaining as to what we've been doing without recognizing, that's why there is such a press when we gather. That's why I don't want to go to every sleepover. That's why, because it's where inspection comes, right? It's where when he walks, when you're gathered as a community and his presence comes and resides with you. He calls you to a place of inspection. So what's happening is we're recognizing that his presence inspects us when we gather, and his presence should be inspecting us, or it is. We just might not be aware, and we might not be saying yes, but that his presence is inspecting us all day, every day, with great purpose, so that he can give us instruction and we can apply it moving forward. And so that is a huge part of what's probably didn't start last week, but what we were really, it was made very clear that level of inspection is amping up these next 13 weeks, because when we get to Tabernacles, things are shifting and things are changing. And so there has to be a degree of readiness in us that can only come from that inspection. So we understand that going into tonight and going into every portion until Tabernacles is going to be all about that preparation.
Yeah.
Everything that's spoken to, everything that you guys teach on, which talk about an opportunity, a night to be able to hear from our guardrails. And I know for what Yahweh is bringing up in his inspection in our home and in our lives, that I want to hear the word through the guardrails of our community right now. Like, this is the time that I would want to hear from you in what it looks like to continue being readied in these next, 13 weeks or so. So whatever he has given you to release tonight, we are receiving it through the lens of that urgency and that heightened state of self-awareness that Sean's describing, which is part of why Sean's heart, as I've been hearing it these last couple of Fridays, is for us to be uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Because when you are comfortable, or I should say when I am comfortable, I am not heightened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
My comfort allows me to stay familiar, and then I miss what it is that he is bringing instruction to an inspection. Or I can be so comfortable and so familiar that I'm not even aware that he's inspecting anything at all.
Right.
And then all of a sudden something happens and I'm no longer in a place of comfort, or someone provides an environment and says, we need to lay down our comfort because there's some things that he wants to heighten us to, and your familiarity keeps you from being able to receive that. So we come under the environment, we come freely into a place of discomfort so that we can allow that heightened state to only amp up, and we receive it with gratitude and anticipation, knowing what it is that he's shutting a door to.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of being uncomfortable, I debated whether to sit on the floor or in a chair. Chose the chair because it doesn't feel very good. So I might be kind of fidgety, so I apologize for that. No, we appreciate everything, Sean, and the environment that you set, Megan, everything that you just spoke to. And I think that there's, if I can just be transparent in something, it feels like there's a lot of, and I say this both personally, but also corporately, that there's both a level of honor in the walk that we're on and in things that Yahweh's allowing us to have access to. And there's also an extreme amount of pressure in it. And I hope that I'll say on a personal level, even just sitting here, like being in these seats, with the incredible revelation, things that have been coming out of the mother and father of the house, mm-hmm. the way that Yahweh's been leading the family, that is a, there's like a sense of pressure in sitting here, while at the same time, there's absolutely a lot of honor in just our family having, again, access to things that he always exposing to us, and the things that he's affording us as we continue to move in this. So maybe if we could just be thinking about that tonight, the level of pressure that's here, that the pressure is ultimately a good thing, right? Mm-hmm. Without pressure, we can't grow.
Yeah.
And without that continued stress, nothing ever really changes, right?
Mm-hmm.
That being said, a couple, mainly just, I guess, I always feel on like a personal level, whenever I go into something, another teaching night or another meeting, whatever it is, it's always, I always like to have it as a practice to just be reminded of certain postural things. Or certain principles as we that we've been taught, that we've been in, so that we're like in a certain mindset and in a certain place as we go into something. So I wanted to speak to a couple things. We've obviously had a lot of emphasis on the environment. Everybody remember Dad's teaching and his emphasis on us being aware of the environment and what that means in quite in very literal ways, but also in a broader sense what that means. Phrase that I've been hearing myself has been environmental expert. That's got a funny connotation when you think about the state of our world right now. There's environmental experts, and I even thought about like being an expert on climate change. And that has absolutely nothing to do with the physical world, but absolutely everything to do with being experts on the environment and setting a climate, so to speak, in the place that we're in.
Yeah.
And like it was taught already to the family that we're not the ones that are, in a sense, being caught off guard or being affected by the environment, but that we're, because of our reflection, what he's doing in us, and because he's dwelling in and with and throughout us, that we're then the ones that are those environmental experts, and we can be ones that affect that, right? Remembering also that all of this is just the continued emphasis on a healthy, holy community, and that these guidelines and these instructions and these commandments that we're getting are for communal living. We've experienced over the years such a deepened sense of what that means. We're not literally living in the same house or the same room together, but we are absolutely with each other, and we are doing life together.
Yeah.
And it's because of that we're grabbing onto and walking out these instructions the best that we can. Knowing too that God cares about our daily walk and our daily life.
Yeah.
That's not a he's not this lofty thing that we're trying to attain someday, but that he is in our midst now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because of that we're taking these things so seriously. And because of that, we too should be ones that try to emulate that. We should be concerned with the details and the daily things. I don't know what each individual person or family's press has been in these past couple weeks and what the home looks like. We've been afforded through connection to, obviously we know what we're going through and what different people in the family are, but it's like undeniably intense. And it seems like it's almost like if we've walked through life to a certain degree with just blinders on and you can only see a couple things at a time, maybe one thing at a time, he's lifting the blinders off and we're having to look at everything, right? We're having to carry a level of intensity and intentionality in that. And that has to do with every little thing. Something that we've shared with Armory over the years with life skills and different mindsets and whatnot is that all of the details matter, which we know are family practices, but even specifically when it comes down to like, how are you arranging your pillows? How are you making your bed? Are you doing the dishes at the end of the night? It's like Yahweh's expanding our awareness, and he's taking the blinders off of a lot of areas of life that we otherwise may have not seen. And I don't know if everybody can attest to this. I'm sure we can in certain ways, but the intentionality in the spirit is it's overflowing, and maybe it's vice versa in certain ways, but it's like it's all meshing together and it's all overflowing to where everything is being looked at. Everything's intentional. Everything's purposeful. Everything's a part of that, right? Remembering too that this is why we're called to not seek position, but posture.
Mm-hmm.
And when we posture ourselves for inspection and his presence in our midst, that ongoing process means that we should never be caught off guard by things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many of you can attest to things that have been exposed recently that caught us off guard, or were like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that came up. Maybe it came up again. Maybe it was something that was recurring. Maybe it was something new that you didn't know was there. Whatever it was, that is part of, because remember, Yahweh already knows all of it. He's not caught off guard. He's not surprised by what's being exposed. And he's wanting us to be postured in that same manner, that we're not, we're pursuing a place by way of a posture that we're also not ever caught off guard by things, which is a big ask if we think about the place that we've been, but ultimately is the truest intention of what he wants us to operate as in our daily lives, that we're never caught off guard by things, but rather because of our posture, that when something gets exposed or something gets brought to the light or whatever, that it's like, I see it, we deal with it, we move, and we continue in that, okay? Knowing also that our walk in all of these things is active. It's not an event-based thing. It's not something that goes week to week, but that it's an active, ongoing thing. It's not a passive taking up of space. Mm-hmm. I don't know that personally, like,
yeah,
that felt like a something I may have heard before or like pondered before, but the way that it's being made clear was a like, it's as if it felt like Yahweh like grabbed my shoulders and like shook me and was like, look at this and pay attention to this. But knowing that our walk in all of this is a active thing, and it's not a passive just taking up space. I was personally also just sort of shook up by the concept or the phrase waste of space. And I don't know if anybody can also agree with that being a thing that we've been pressed in as well. Okay. Anything you want to add to that?
No, I just think that last piece that he's getting on, in a waste of space, like just even evaluating that, like in this moment, like how are we postured? How are we positioned? Are we ready? Are we engaged? Are we distracted? Are we focused in? Are we coming hungry? Are we ready to like take things and make it strategic through the week? Or are we just wasting space? So just carrying that.
Mm-hmm. This has been an ongoing point of emphasis, but just to reiterate in this portion, I think that, and I'll circle back and speak to this in a little bit, but I think the concept of remembrance is absolutely at the forefront of this. Remembering where we are because of where we've been, what he's done to bring us to where we are, and being in that constant remembrance. It's a posture. Remembrance is not a position that we have. It's not a thing that we just loftily think about. But that it's an active heart's, I was going to say position, heart posture. Position feels like it's becoming one of those words where it's like, I don't want to really say it. But remembrance is at the forefront of these portions, and it's a critical principle for us to continue to hone in on. We remember, like I said, our own journey in our own Exodus process, where we've been and where we are now. Something Mom said was that the system we're now exiting is ourselves. Mm-hmm. Was that clear to everybody?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And did that absolutely make sense? And did that bring a new perspective?
Yes. Even?
Because the point of that is to say, right, we're not, there's nobody else to blame.
Right.
Yeah.
We're out of systems. We're out of where we've been. We're out of that thing that we once had full ability and full reason, every reason under the sun that we could think about to blame something. Mm-hmm. And for a time that was okay, because it helped us realize the difference in where we were and what Yahweh was calling us into. Mm-hmm. But we're past that now, and we're absolutely in a place, like she was saying, where what we're exiting now is ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And as I would even say that, as uncomfortable and painful as it was at times to exit certain systems and how much of a fight that could have been, mm-hmm. it feels like it's much more of that now. Because we don't naturally want to leave ourselves, get out of ourselves. We don't naturally want to do that. Mm-hmm. But that's the press that he's got on us right now.
Yeah.
All of this, again, with these portions that we're seeing, it all should be a cause and a press for obedience. And mm-hmm. we should be obedient out of a remembrance. And then that remembrance sends us into even more obedience. And mm-hmm. it's that gratitude cycle.
Yeah.
Right? This is sort of a random insert, but I feel like it's definitely, it's applicable. Because, of course, with all of this, as we're being pressed in looking at the details and carrying all of these things, wanted to kind of just randomly throw in a reminder. It was said at the beginning of the month, but this Hebraic month that we're in right now is the month of Tammuz. Everybody remember some of the things that this month stands for, some of the symbolic aspects of this? This month represents worship and idolatry, which when I hear that, I just think of self. Mm-hmm. That's me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Literally, that's me, but that's also me having to get out of self-worship.
Yeah.
Putting myself in a position because I don't like his.
Yeah.
Or I don't agree with his. It's self-preservation. It's all these different forms of idolatry and worship that he's clearly showing us what the truth in it is, and we have to walk in that. This is a month where we watch and we adjust, which to me again just speaks to the timing of things that he has us in as we come into alignment with his seasons. If this is a time where we watch and adjust, that is that process of inspection, the evaluation process. If we're in a self-preserving, self-focused idolatry type of place, when something is pointed out to you, we're just going to probably just going to stay on the same trajectory, because we're going to have every reason that we need to be able to justify where we're at. Whereas what he's saying is it's time to watch and adjust. And what that means is that you have to submit to what he's watching, and we have to be able to adjust on our part to come into greater alignment with that.
Yeah.
This is a month where you see what you see and you look again.
Mm-hmm.
You see what you see and you look again. That really strikes me and stands out, because that's like a call to that deeper level of intentionality of when something's exposed, mm-hmm. it's not just exposed for the sake of exposure.
Mm-hmm.
Something's exposed for the sake of you see it, you repent, you transform,
yeah.
you move,
yes.
you change, you readjust, and we keep going.
Mm-hmm.
So see what you see and ignore it. See what you see and look again, and then you move in it, okay?
Yeah.
This is a month where covenant alignment is critical.
Mm-hmm.
I find that very fitting and very timely with how much of the portions recently have talked about covenant. This is the fourth month, which is a doorway into the rest of the year. And I would say also the rest of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
We know, of course, that literally this month is a piece of it, but this month is a piece of this next, or 12 weeks now, right? It was 13 weeks last week.
Mm-hmm.
But as we near that shift that we talked about in Tabernacles, I would say that it feels intense and weighty and difficult and uncomfortable right now, because this literally is a trajectory setter for how we enter into and pass through that shift. We have to look at all the connecting pieces, because they all matter. There's another aspect of this month. Like I said, remembering that this countdown is in play. It's not 13 weeks that just stays 13 weeks, but it literally counts down as we move on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are we good so far?
Yes.
Does all that make sense? Okay. There's a certain way I want to approach this Torah portion, because I am by no means a expert in anything that has to do with these with the Torah. We're all learning, we're all growing in this, right? But there's a couple principles or matters that are addressed in this that I think are important for us to be able to connect what's being literally read and how that is applied to what we're doing. And then of course remembering that crossover is that these are not just ancient things, but that we're learning to literally obey so that we can be literally obedient. It's like an oxymoron, but it absolutely makes sense. So some of the matters in this portion that are important are, again, remembrance, matters of communal living, marriage and covenant, labor and fair wages,
mm-hmm.
economic integrity, especially in the context of governance of the promised land, fairness, preservation of life, especially those most in need and most vulnerable among us, justice, obedience. I think we could draw out probably quite a bit more, but those are some of the matters that I think are important for us to recognize tonight. Okay.
Your notes are messing up my notes.
Uh-oh.
I have to move my notes. Our notes are on the same note thing. And it's messing mine up. So
Now my phone's glitching. Okay. Because you're about to get into a tour portion, right? I have a title for this tour portion. So all fancy, but like mom. Okay. I felt like the title would be God Protects the Vulnerable from Both Foreign and Domestic.
Just a beer too. Did you type that one here or no?
Yeah, mine's not with yours. Just go ahead.
Okay. Now mine's glitching, saying that you added stuff to it. All right. So the way that I think that I wanted to just, in light of the principles that are being shown in this, the way I think I want to approach this portion is to just kind of go through, because if you read it, obviously it spans two chapters and there's like, it's following that same pattern. It's commandment after commandment after commandment. And when you first glance through it and you're reading it on Shabbat morning or Friday night, you might initially read it and think like, what the heck is going on here? But a couple things I'd say is, of course, we got to remember that there's a cultural context at play, right? There is an ancient culture that is the filter through which these things are being spoken. Mm-hmm. And though that may mean that there are literal things that we can't literally say, like, well, that is this today. We're not going to over-spiritualize it. We're not going to get crazy and lofty with it. But we're going to try our best to just say, here's the principle in that. This is what that means. And we're going to make sure that we're applying that. Okay? So I'm going to kind of just go through the topics or the commandments that were given in this and just sort of relate it by way of the principle in, I think, what Yahweh would want us to gather from it. Knowing that those things are happening, okay?
But because it's literal and it's simple,
yeah,
it's going to be literal and simple.
Yeah.
So.
All right. So, divorce and remarriage. I think that the thing that we draw from this is that God's faithfulness is our model that we operate mm-hmm. under, that we come under, that we continue to operate in, and that although there are things that are recognized in an earthly court or things that happen on earth, our pursuit is what he emulates in heaven, right? Mm-hmm. And this just further speaks to our sensibilities, our interpretations, our over-spiritualizing of things, our determination of our own will or whatever it is for the sake of comfort, our own gratification, things that we want to pursue personally, whatever that is. But of course, knowing that as people, we're flawed and we intend to interpret and try to form ways of operating. We're full of excuses and loopholes to satisfy our own desires and our own appetites.
Yep.
But that does not mean that that's the end all be all.
Yeah.
That even in these commandments, remembering it's been spoken many times before, but Yahweh is so faithful and so good that he gives a system of operating in a fallen world, knowing that there's things that we're being pressured by.
Yeah.
He gives us a way to work through it.
Yeah.
Right? I would say, not I would say, but learning from the very beginning of all of this, that was never an intention that he had, but he intends for covenant to be a perfect holy union, mm-hmm. and that's what we're in pursuit of.
Yes.
Our reflection of that on earth, but then literally our posture in that, in us toward him, mm-hmm. because he is that toward us, right? Mm-hmm. Sorry, I was just freaked out again. Okay. I find it really interesting, the timing, that the next commandment has to do with newlyweds after it talks about marriage and divorce. It's interesting that comes right after that. And some things that are important to this are that initial time was meant to build a foundation, mm-hmm. to be fruitful and multiply. Remembering that even that is a literal commandment, that we're to be fruitful and multiply. That's his intention. Mm-hmm. I'm going through these kind of quick. The upper millstone. Was anybody confused by upper millstone?
Wait, I have something for that.
Oh, go ahead.
Before he does that, divorce, I thought it was interesting because obviously mom talked about polygamy. Mm-hmm. Like it was an excuse to be a polygamist.
Yeah.
Same thing. It's not a reason Yeah. That you can just go get a divorce. Like, people will take the first couple verses and be like, see, I have permission to get a divorce.
Right.
When in reality, if you read it, the first three, I think, are just context to basically get you to the fourth one,
mm-hmm.
where he's basically just speaking to what to do if we mess up.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like, giving us, like, that next step, because we live in a fallen world and because we suck, here's the things that you can do.
Yeah.
To, like, try to make it right. It's not permission.
Yeah.
So the first three are, like, more of building context versus, like, giving you a loophole.
Yeah. These matters here point to issues of the human heart. And remember, of course, an overarching context that we are needing to be aware of in all of this is the premeditated action versus making a mistake.
Yeah.
And that there's a big difference in those. So going back to the upper millstone, did anybody research what that was? It's kind of a cool thing. So the upper millstone was literally a piece of equipment that I think every family probably had that was a daily thing where they used to grind grain and things to make their bread. It was a means of sustenance. So when it talked about not taking that as collateral or taking that for any reason, that literally had to do with our own human, whether it be vengeance or a poor heart position or whatever the issue was, not taking somebody's form of literal sustenance,
mm-hmm.
that in itself was like taking advantage of the vulnerable aspect.
Yeah.
And Yahweh's so good that even in that commandment, it could seem flippant or it can seem kind of random, like, okay, don't take the upper millstone. Okay, what does that even mean? That I don't know what the literal equivalent of that today would be. I'm sure we could all ponder different examples, but that just points to his absolute goodness and mm-hmm. care for the sanctity of life and the beauty and all that. You know, it's not depriving of basic human needs.
Mm-hmm.
With that, Yahweh is protecting the borrower's dignity and preserving life.
Mm-hmm.
So, like he's saying, if you were to take somebody's millstone, that was literally like how they would make food for their family. Mm-hmm. So taking someone's millstone is basically taking their life for your own justice. Mm-hmm. So it's like you're basically taking justice into your own hands in doing so.
Mm-hmm.
So he's safeguarding their life and their dignity in not taking what literally gives them sustenance. In the
yeah.
Kidnapping.
Did this take this? Did anybody like read that and be like, just?
Yes.
I literally was like, what? I had a moment where I like went back and I was like reading. My mind kind of blew. This is a total side tangent, but my mind kind of blew when he was talking about kidnapping, because then it like brought a revelation of understanding why the brothers were so scared. Because if the penalty is death, like, all of y'all are dead, like, right now. And instead, there was forgiveness that was extended, as well as more left. Like, I can share it, but I just thought that was crazy and just brought revelation to, like, the fear that they must have been in recognizing what they've done.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, kidnapping. Don't do it. No, but it speaks to a greater degree of, it's not just I feel like it's one of those things that even in a modern sense is sort of like a watered down,
mm-hmm.
it sounds terrible to say it, but it's sort of like a watered down thing. It's familiar is what it is. You go into a grocery store and you see the big board that's on display that you probably never even notice, but you can see all the hundreds of people that are kidnapped or missing or whatever,
mm-hmm.
right? Like it's a desensitized thing
that
is also a very real problem.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because it's not just a problem because it's an inconvenience.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a bad or mean thing to do. It's not that it hurts people's feelings. It's literally mishandling of life and the mishandling of creation.
Mm-hmm.
And even putting yourself in a position to be the judge over his creation.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you think about that in a deeper sense, that's a crazy position to take.
Yeah.
And I think that there's probably, I wouldn't dive into it right now, but I'm sure that we could all press into different ways of what kidnapping can look like in more, not literal terms, but even just in spiritual terms of mm-hmm. what that could look like.
Yeah.
I'm reminded even myself of the like coveting nature of where we've the systems we've come from, where you just you want to like take something for your own. You want to take something that was meant for somebody else. You want to whatever that is. But that's a big deal. It's mishandling of life and of creation, and taking advantage of it even for selfish gain. Because remember, the cultural context in this was often, like in the Joseph story and in many others, there was a financial incentive or there was a reason behind doing it, right? It was so you could take somebody and you could sell them and you could profit off of it. But it was, you can see how twisted that is. Zaharat.
Sorry, I'm gonna say it wrong. I'm like tits a rat.
say it like mom said.
Say it like a white kid.
This is interesting because the thing that's highlighted in this is that we are to, in all things, but of course what's emphasized here is to take care to follow the priestly instructions. That in all of those there is very real purpose behind. When there's a what I'll say is when there's a condition you find yourself in, he's so gracious to provide instructions from a priestly place so that we can see restoration in what he intends it to be, and not by our own means or by our own way self-interpret, self-diagnose, whatever that is, so that we can get back to a comfortable place. But recognizing that uncomfortable place is an opportunity to follow those instructions.
Well, and remember that we all know, like we've talked about what this is at great length, but remembering that this isn't like a medical condition.
Right.
This is a spiritual condition of the heart, of slanderous gossip,
right.
Conniving, backbiting, fighting for position. Like this is speaking against someone in an effort basically to gain something on your own behalf. And in doing so, it's like this goes back to what Dad was talking about oh my gosh, how did he say it? Where you Yahweh already knows, but it's being made known to us.
Yeah.
Like that's like a physical representation of like Yahweh already knows how you're talking. It's not a surprise to him. This is like a way of him getting your attention that you are out of line. You are speaking against the things that he has put in order. You are doing things that are not obviously following Torah, and he's trying to get your attention so that we can be aware of ourselves. Self-discovery. The other thing I thought was crazy was it referenced Miriam, and Miriam was interesting to look back on. I feel like every time something gets brought back around, you know how we'll get like another layer. Miriam, I think it's crazy because she was blood. And this is something we've talked to Armory about. Like, you're not going to get your own salvation. Like, you don't get salvation because your parents do it, right? Just like Miriam is going to have to be held responsible for her own actions. Yeah. Just because she's blood doesn't mean she was exempt from having to uphold things or exempt from the responsibilities that she needed to carry on her own. And it also, she wasn't exempt because of her position. Or because she was close to him. So blood and position means nothing when you're in disobedience.
Yeah, that's good.
I talked a lot in this portion also about pledges, which I find interesting because I think that's a thing that we probably don't think about, nor do we have like a modern, at least day-to-day application of it. But at the same time, it's such an important concept and thing for us to look at because it had to do with the commandments that he has around pledges have to do, again, with taking care of the poor and the disadvantaged. Remembering in that, too, that there's a cultural context, of course, especially if there was, you mentioned widows and orphans, women and children, that there was literally, because of the cultural context, if you lost a certain means of sustenance or provision or if you became a disadvantaged portion of the population,
mm-hmm.
that's not, he doesn't dismiss that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a ignoring of, because you lost a position in society,
yeah,
or
yeah.
because you didn't, you don't look a certain way or whatever it is, that his value on life, his value
yes.
on the importance of that is safeguarded in every way.
Mm-hmm.
He speaks about not taking someone's cloak, but giving it back to them.
Mm-hmm.
That literal reason behind that is it was a form of protection and safety,
mm-hmm.
and so you could sleep warmly at night.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Imagine like carrying around a cloak, and if you were to take that as collateral because you were making somebody work for you, or they needed a job and they were working for you, but you kept something as collateral. He also talks about paying wages the same day. Like all these things may
yeah.
seem mundane, and they may seem like, okay, there's this. But the beautiful picture in all of it
mm-hmm.
is that he cares about the day-to-day matters.
Mm-hmm.
He cares about every little aspect
yeah.
that in our own human sensibilities
yeah.
we'll often forget
mm-hmm.
or take advantage of or lay down or choose
mm-hmm.
to not look at, whatever that is, but that we are under a God and in pursuit ourselves of operating fully in a system that cares for all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a beautiful thing to be in pursuit
mm-hmm.
of. Did anybody also find it interesting the aspect of not entering the home of the one who pledged?
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of an interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Did anybody like dive into that and kind of try to look into more of what that meant?
Mm-hmm.
I know Amber had some things to talk about that, but I wanted to just relate that to like a modern context. We've had it pointed out a few times. Dad does such a good job because of his former profession and the things that he's experienced and what he knows. He'll often draw these like modern connecting points, right?
Mm-hmm.
Our modern system of search warrants and not mm-hmm. violating the sanctity of someone's
yeah.
home and the privacy of someone's
yeah.
home is rooted in Torah. That you're not going to go barging into someone's home. Literally, because it could be unsafe, but it's a violation of privacy.
Mm-hmm.
You could start a fight, and then life could be lost, and then,
mm-hmm.
right? There's all these things that are wrapped up in it, but it's so cool that even our modern legal system, in
yeah.
many ways, is rooted in these
yeah.
in these Torah-based principles, yet we're super unaware of it.
Yeah.
If anybody hasn't yet, I encourage you, like, later on tonight, just Google image Lady Justice.
Lady Justice?
Lady Justice. Has anybody ever heard that phrase, Lady Justice?
Yeah.
You know, that refers to is the symbol of our legal system. It's a woman holding a sword, a scale,
mm-hmm.
and she's blindfolded.
Mm-hmm.
That speaks to the precision cut of justice,
mm-hmm.
the fact that justice should be blind,
mm-hmm.
and that there's like a weights and measures concept in things needing to be balanced out, right? These are all like principles, eye for an eye, tooth for tooth. These
yeah.
are all principles that are rooted in Torah. That our
mm-hmm.
modern system has been based off of, which is just in and of itself is just a really cool concept to be aware of now,
mm-hmm.
But also at the same time, that honestly just speaks to the endurance of Yahweh's word
mm-hmm.
and the endurance of the principles that He asks
yeah.
us to operate under, in that they're not for a time then and things have changed now, but that
mm-hmm.
they are absolutely enduring principles that
mm-hmm.
we should walk in.
Yeah. The other thing I thought was cool is he had mentioned that the lender will be blessed when they return their pledge at night. And I think that was interesting because it was like he was highlighting another layer of righteousness to be able to return something to someone at the end of the night, because like he was saying, a lot of times for a poor person, that was literally all they had was their cloak.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can imagine like being in Flagstaff, at
mm-hmm.
night, you would need
yeah.
your cloak. You
yeah.
would need your covering.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't just here's your thing back,
mm-hmm.
but it was a matter of preserving life
yeah.
through the night so that they would be able to sustain, so that they could uphold their end.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that you're not then, like as the lender, you're not positioning yourself to then be so above that you would disregard life
yeah.
or their life
yeah.
for your own benefit.
Mm-hmm.
I also kind of went on a tangent, and I'm hoping I can kind of bring this together, because in my notes I literally said, like, holy, because my mind like blew, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to connect it, but with a poor man's pledge being his garment, I was looking into more of what a garment is, mm-hmm. and what that looks like, and that they're not, like, what I was finding is that they're not merely just clothes, but it's a means to preserve life, and they are visible signs of one's identity, dignity, authority, and covenant obligations.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about, this is, I mean, I went on like a huge tangent, so if anybody wants something that will just send you on a rabbit trail, you can look into like what garments are, or where garments are yeah. mentioned, because there was a ton, but like just a couple examples, like Joseph's special tunic mm-hmm. marks him as Jacob's favorite son, or favored son. Pharaoh clothed Joseph in fine linen as a sign of his new authority.
Mm-hmm.
Saul tears Samuel's robe, symbolizing the kingdom being torn from him.
Mm-hmm.
Elijah throws his mantle over Elijah, symbolizing his prophetic calling.
Mm-hmm.
But this is where my mind kind of blew, because the symbolism in things even before they got the Torah mm-hmm. was like, what? So I don't know if anybody played the Torah class teaching where the guy's talking, but I like freaked out, because he was talking about how Rebecca and Isaac are like an example of a pledge,
mm-hmm.
and he was speaking to how Rebecca was almost representative of a pledge, while the servant Eliezer went to receive her.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about like even just this Torah portion where it says you'll wait outside to receive mm-hmm. your collateral,
yeah,
that's literally how he positioned himself. Do you guys remember the yeah. brother saying like, why are you out here? Come inside. I've prepared a place.
He's invited in.
He's obeying the Torah in the sense that he's going to receive a pledge, and he's obeying the Torah even before there was
yeah.
like written.
Yeah.
I was like, what? Then the other crazy thing is that later when he brings Rebecca, it says specifically that Isaac waited,
mm-hmm.
or Isaac received her before sunset.
Mm-hmm.
So he received his pledge before sunset to be covered.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, wait, it gets even crazier.
Wait, there's more.
This is where my notes say. Because I freaked out. Okay, so as I'm learning, but I also got really excited because we're talking about like getting into culture
mm-hmm.
and like where we're gonna be headed.
Mm-hmm.
And this little glimpse of culture like blew my world. But I guess in the Hebrew culture, there's an aspect of women being represented as the husband's garment.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an aspect, like we've always talked about how the man
yeah.
is the covering, but there's an aspect of when you become one, then you are also the covering.
Mm-hmm.
So when he took Rebecca as his pledge, he received his garment
mm.
and literally was like covered in his garment.
Mm.
And I was like, what? Like, I don't know if anybody else caught that, but I was like, that is insane. Like just thinking about like our own process, like I feel like our marriage like blew up over the last couple weeks, and we've been like slowly piecing some things and like getting some more revelation. And one of the things that mom said, I actually went back to her and I was all, you said that. She was like, what? she didn't realize that she had said it, because they just naturally flow with insight. But she was saying that I am his partner, like I am his covering.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a role in my responsibility as a wife
mm-hmm.
to partner in that covering
mm-hmm.
yep.
and to be like that representation of something to cover him
mm-hmm.
in, like from the world, to shield mm-hmm. him from
yeah.
the world,
yes.
from the world's conditions, from the world's
yeah.
blech, right? Mm-hmm. Like I have a role in that.
Yeah.
So I kind of like freaked out. And then this is just another representation, which totally like flipped my mind on a lot of things personally.
But another example of a garment in the word was Ezekiel. It's 16:8, but it talks about how God spreads his garment over Jerusalem and enters into covenant with her. And I mean, that whole chapter, do you guys know what it's referencing? It's Yeshua basically taking Israel as his bride, and he's like adorning her, but it goes into how she's a harlot, and it's like this total devastating, like I would encourage everybody to go back and read it, because it's like, I didn't know what I was reading when I went to it, and so I went to like where it was referenced, and I started reading, and I was like, oh my God, this is the best love story I've ever read, and then it turns into like the most heart-wrenching like reality of our condition and how we'll position ourselves, and what started out so perfect and pure and loved and nurtured and addressed and adorned and spoken over and nourished is then twisted, because we will take what is so freely given and we'll take it as our own, and then we will, it's like that, we forget.
Right.
We forget where the provision came from, and we'll take it into ourselves and say, like, look at all these things, which basically just sends us down a track of being completely isolated, and the example literally goes into, like, every imaginable thing that you could think of how a harlot would basically operate, burning their children. Like, it's just horrendous. But I say all that because the purity of what we receive in that is, I don't know how to like describe it, but it's like his pledge for us in that, which we ultimately leave unfulfilled. It's a humbling thing to read, to hear how he positions himself and how we can posture ourselves to respond, to safeguard what happens, and to try to be intentional to rewrite those things.
Yeah.
So when we're talking about a posturing or an intentionality to be evaluated or, I'm blanking on the word, inspected, that we're taking that intentionally, because I don't want to ever get to the place where he is pouring out lavishly and I am still in pride, rebellion, pushback, hatred, bitterness, to the point that I could go off track in any manner. And so just being intentional to really take that opportunity that he gives us every morning to be inspected and not take that for granted.
Yeah.
Because there's so much that he's pouring out and covering you in his garment.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I tied that back around, but
that was good.
I just felt like that pledge and what he gives to us and how he will create a pledge for us and cover us in that, that there's a responsibility for us as the bride to then respond.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
That's good. Switching gears.
Sorry.
No, you're good. Kidding. Yeah, that was really good. The next part has to do with intergenerational punishment. It's interesting to read that, because I feel like there's different modern day examples that could skew or kind of like, I don't know, I guess the word that comes to mind is just skew our perspective of what this is speaking to. But it talks about, right, the punishment of a father for their son and a son for their father, and it speaks about the capital punishment essentially being applied to the next or the previous generation. And that's interesting, because I want to connect that to something that we've learned about before. This is not the same thing as a different concept that we've been taught, which is vertical retribution, which, if you guys remember, I believe the night that we learned this, that we were taught this, was, I think we were downstairs. Mm-hmm. It was 10 years ago. No, it was, I don't know how many portions ago. But we talked about, like, generational curses, generational impact, right? And that is the concept of vertical retribution, whereas what's being spoken to here in the Torah portion is intergenerational punishment. And the difference in those is the flaw of man versus Yahweh's intention behind something. Remember, we were taught that he will allow you to visit or be visited by something that was generational, mm-hmm. generations before
yes.
you, right?
Yeah.
That is not punishment
right.
or his flawed character mm-hmm. in us being punished by something that wasn't dealt with before we got here,
mm-hmm.
right? This in the portion is speaking to that flawed aspect of human sensibility
yep.
that will, out of vengeance, out of whatever circumstance, want to take revenge on and extend that punishment in a direction that, like, will interpret as necessary
mm-hmm.
or to cause an additional amount of pain,
mm-hmm.
right? So I wanted to make that clear that those are not the same things. And in fact, Yahweh's goodness, again, in all of this is wrapped up all in this instruction, because in a fallen world, when in our own, whether it be heat of the moment or a heart of vengeance that will carry, that he has an answer for that flawed side of humanity, that mm-hmm. broken side of the world that we're in, right? Which again is just it overall just an awesome overarching concept in all of these. But this is an example again of his instructions safeguarding our human tendencies.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a difference between our human tendencies and the things that Yahweh will, in his proper order, allow us to go through, experience,
yeah.
or have to be visited by, right?
Yeah.
Does that make sense to everybody?
Yes. Yes. Okay.
Care for widows and orphans. Again, this is God's goodness. He instructs us on how to act in a community sense, but also, again, that principle of remembrance that we were once in that same position. Literally, in the cultural context of this, they were once in Egypt, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were once that same disadvantaged, humbled, vulnerable mm-hmm. place. And so to not to forget that,
yes.
but be postured in remembrance that
mm-hmm.
his care for human life extends beyond our own, like, hey, I got out of it, or I'm good now, or I'm whatever, that it extends far beyond that, right?
Wow. This was another one of those trails I went on. I'm looking at Misty because it has to do with Ruth. I was like, what? But Ruth was another example, going back to the garment, where Ruth went to Boaz and literally asked him, like, bring me under your garment.
Mm-hmm.
But my mind blew, because reading through Ruth again with this Torah portion
mm-hmm.
just brought so much more understanding, because when you... Let me just get that out. I should have marked it. Put a jump. Okay, Ruth 2:5. I'm just gonna read this. Then Boaz asked the foreman of his harvesters, "Whose young woman is this?" She was a Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the region of Moab. The foreman replied, "She asked, 'Please allow me to glean and gather among the barley sheaves behind the harvesters.' So she came and has been working in the field since morning until now, except for a little while in the shelter." Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Listen to me, my daughter. Do not go to glean in another field or even pass on from here, but stay close to my female workers. Keep your eyes on the field that they are harvesting and follow after them. I strongly ordered the young men not to touch you. When you are thirsty, you can go to the jars and drink from the water of that the young men have drawn." Then she fell upon her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes that you have noticed me, even though I am a foreigner?" Boaz replied and said to her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law since your husband's death has been fully reported to me. How you left your father and mother in the land of your birth and came to a people you did not know before. May Adonai repay you for what you have done, and may you be fully rewarded by Adonai, God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. So what I saw was crazy about that is obviously in the Torah portion, it's talking about leaving things for the widow, the orphan, the foreigner, and to have a literal example of that, of what that looks like, just helps like click things, because you have, in, at least in my head, I have this vague thing of like, okay, a widow, an orphan, a foreigner, and I have like these images in my mind, but when you read like a literal example of our heritage, it's like, oh, like it just becomes more real. But what I also thought was crazy is that her posture went before her. When she had no position, when she had no title, when she had nothing to express herself, the way that she had postured herself as one who will cling went before her, and that is what she was known by. To where Boaz could say, you are one that I would honor, you are welcome in my field, let me go above and beyond. Like later he takes her into the home, he feeds her, he gives her above and beyond what is even needed, sends her home with extra for her mother-in-law. Like he receives her in fullness, which I mean, that's a whole other thing for like Boaz's side and how he positioned himself and how we can position ourselves. But to remember her posturing and the life that was given to her and the sustenance because of her positioning outside of seeking position or like she wasn't in the field like attention seeking.
Right.
Like let me just, I'm trying to think, like scandalously, like, hey Boaz. Like she's not like, she's literally working to she's following Torah. She's doing what has been allowed and the grace that she's been given. And in that her posturing is made known.
Yeah.
And Yahweh is the one who then is highlighting and bringing her to a position, and she's not having to attain anything.
Yep. Yeah, that's good.
Just another example.
Yeah, that's good. When everybody read through the gleanings from the fields or the vineyards, when he said, when you shake your olive tree, you leave some behind, you leave some in the field. Did anybody read that and think, like, why would you not go grab that stuff, collect that? Like, it almost sounds impractical. It kind of sounds dumb in a sense. Like, if you had this vineyard, you had this field, why would you not get everything that you absolutely have? It's an interesting concept because it, like, it almost in a certain way, kind of flies in the face of our modern sensibility, our modern value systems, our even, I'll even extend it to our capitalistic way of thinking in certain ways, where it's like, I gotta get everything.
Yeah.
Which makes sense, right? Like, if you're gonna take the full.
Think about a pinata. Like, every kid, I mean, this is just a, it's a terrible example, but you hit a pinata, and everybody loses any sensibility they've ever had in their life. Kids are pushing, adults are like face palming. Like, it's like, I don't know why that's like an example in my head, but it's like, we've got to like capitalize on attacking everything that we can, and the selfishness just like explodes from a pinata.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, sorry. It just makes me think of like kids at a party.
Yeah.
Savages.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I know that definitely makes sense. I didn't think about that, but that definitely makes sense. But it kind of like flies in the face of that sort of capitalistic or like modern way of thinking, where you want to grab everything, gather it all up for yourself, make use of everything, which in a way isn't wrong, right? Like, to utilize everything, to be intentional in what purpose things have, like, that's not a bad thing. But again, the beauty in these instructions is God's care for human life. And even in a cultural context, people didn't have cars, they didn't have planes where they could fly over all the vineyards and all the fields. They didn't have all these different modes of travel. They traveled by foot, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't think it would have been very practical to throw your refrigerator on your back and carry it however many miles you needed to. And so this was literally a way to just safeguard people's sustenance, their travel, their movement, their life, their families when they were traveling with their people, whatever that was.
Yeah, they
didn't
have
Yetis. They didn't have their Yeti coolers on wheels. And so this is just another really awesome example of his care for human life. And even beyond what I would say is the care for that human life that you may never know, you may never see, but you're intentional to look for it. I would say that it was even probably to some degree a greater press on the owner of that vineyard or the owner of that field that you had to be intentional and aware of, even if it was in private.
Yeah.
You remember, like, he said to do this because of whatever that is, and which in my mind just speaks to an aspect of obeying literally and coming under his systems, which is that we may not know, again, beyond our sensibilities, beyond all those default settings, getting to the place where our understanding is exhausted is when we can finally start exercising trust. This to me is another example of that in a very simple way, that you don't literally, you're not literally maybe going to see who comes and takes that.
Mm-hmm.
You're not literally going to do, right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
But it's like an exercise of your own faith and knowing he told me to do this for a reason, so I'm going to do it, knowing that it's unto and for something that I may not see.
Yep. Yeah.
This is another, I not to like dive deep into this, but there's a section of the Gospels where Yeshua is being confronted by gathering grain in a field on Shabbat, right? And he's being confronted saying that he's breaking the Sabbath because he's harvesting something. But he's referencing, because again, our Savior knows Torah, and the Torah is eternal, and he operated fully in it, but he was confronted in being one that was disobedient, but he wasn't disobedient because he was absolutely operating under the principles that we see here. So just to kind of like throw that out there, again, I can't dive deep into it, but that there's all these enduring examples of these principles that are long lasting, they're eternal.
Mm-hmm.
These next sections are cool. The justice from the court talked about public punishment or corporal punishment, not capital punishment, but the flogging. Anybody read that and think, like, the F is flogging? This one is interesting because there's an aspect of when it talks about not bringing, what did it say literally? Not bringing shame on, not degrading your brother in your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
All these different pieces to it, right? It had to do with Yahweh's principle of when there was a price to be paid, when there was a punishment to have to endure, it was for the purpose of teaching so that we could change and we could grow.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't for the purpose of humiliation,
mm-hmm.
which
we
all can probably relate to that as parents.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, all
or
of us,
kids.
As parents or as kids. Dumb way to say that, but there's a very big difference in, again, like the vengeance side of our own sensibilities or being angered by your kid and you punish them and you want them to kind of feel bad and humiliated. Whereas the truth in Yahweh's instruction that we're called to, that we're supposed to emulate is that side of like, there's a reality to punishment and you have to be corrected in what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not for the purpose of humiliating you and making you live a life of eternal shame.
Right.
But it's to bring a reality to the correction and bring that course correction so that you can grow from that and not be degraded in others' eyes, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not about humiliation, it's about teaching. It was also a safeguard of our human tendency to literally go too far. One of the resources that I was in today was that number 40 is interesting because it may seem like a random number, right? I think the significance of that number could be seen in all kinds of different contexts. In different examples, but one of the resources that I heard earlier was saying that a common practice in that time, in that culture, in that period, was a number that was much higher. Like 40 was on the low end. So he actually like brought that number, that punishment down, and then said you should not go beyond this as a way to not only separate themselves from the surrounding cultures that were based in opposing principles, but it also literally safeguarded what I had just said, but also our tendency to go too far.
Yeah.
which then would just lead to the defilement of the land, right? Like imagine that example or that position of somebody who's carrying out that punishment. You go too far and you murder the guy.
Yeah.
That then defiles the land, and it now means that you're the one that is in the wrong.
Yeah.
So it's like God, he's so good in all these things that they can seem mundane and they can seem kind of just like thrown out there as sort of random, but they're full of safeguards and full of ways to essentially protect ourselves from ourselves.
Yeah.
Well, and if you can imagine, even beyond, or I don't know how many I could handle, but just thinking like there's a point where you start to lose your own dignity in how you respond to something like that.
Yeah.
So he's even in correction, he's still preserving you.
Mm-hmm.
He's still setting safeguards to make sure that you are corrected, but not overly punished.
Mm-hmm.
Like one of the things that Growing Kids talks about is that if you punish incorrectly or you over punish, you actually do the opposite of your intentions, and you can create a bitterness that then just furthers the issue. So there's a piece of knowing that there's a level of sustaining somebody's dignity in correction and making sure that we're handling that, we're positioning ourselves in that way, whether you're being corrected or correcting, that you are receiving those things through that lens that he's still so good that he's going to preserve your life, but he's going to correct you because he loves you.
Yeah.
But he's not going to do it to such an extent that you're literally humiliated and your reputation is destroyed and you have nothing further to stand on, because now the punishment is secondary to the humiliation that you've now suffered.
Yeah.
So.
I've asked this a few times, but was anybody thrown off by the next one? You are not to muzzle the ox while it is threshing. Yeah, that one's interesting because it's like it's talking about he may strike him 40 times, but no more. Otherwise, he would beat him with too many a wound beyond these, and your brother would be degraded in your eyes. You are not to muzzle an ox while it is threshing. And then it moves on to something else. Which, again, in our own filters of all of this, we could read this. I mean, this just supports a mindset of like, well, that's irrelevant, and that's not needed, and that's gone and done away, whatever that is. But that concept of not muzzling the ox while it's threshing had to do with literal like means of agriculture, where because an ox is a grazing animal, it would constantly eat as it goes, as it's pulling a plow, as it's yoked to a plow, and it's threshing grain, and you're harvesting things, right? And so in order to like increase productivity and reduce the amount of time that it would take to do that, they would prevent it from eating and grazing and just make it work. You'd whip it and you'd make it pull and make it work. Increase productivity and the amount of stuff that you were able to produce. The principle in this that is, again, pointing to just Yahweh's goodness is that it's not just like this random thing that's thrown in there, like he forgot to write it down and he just added an addendum to it. But the principle in this has to do with the like honoring the fruit of your labor. It has to do with fairness. It has to do with you always care for not muzzling somebody and withholding the fruit of their work and withholding their sustenance, whatever that was, while they were putting in honest work.
Mm-hmm.
It was, again, a means of sustaining life. It's these enduring principles that we can draw from that, again, are not just random tidbits that are thrown in there, but they're absolutely enduring principles that we can pull from.
One thing this was mirroring was 1 Corinthians 9:13. It's referencing the servant leadership and basically what they're allowed to receive, basically. But 9:13 says,
Don't you know that those who perform the holy services eat from the temple, and those who wait on the altar receive a share at the altar? This whole like chapter is speaking to how, as an emissary, like, I have poured out my life for you, I have done all these things, I have raised you up, I have discipled you, am I not entitled to have some repayment? Am I not entitled to my own ways of living? Am I not entitled to my own, like, life, basically? And a lot of times I think that scripture will get manipulated into, like you need to tithe more, or you need to sow into your leadership, and it kind of gets like twisted and weird. But what I think is interesting is that just going back to that Torah portion with the ox, like he's doing the work, but Yahweh's safeguarding that we're not taking advantage of something without then giving it its own due. I can't think of the word. Its own dues.
Mm-hmm. All right, a couple more here, and then we'll tie in something else. But the next section had to do with levirate marriage. There's a lot in this, and I don't know that I would be one to like speak to all of it, but just to hit some concepts. Yahweh's desire for his people was, again, to be fruitful and multiply, right? Mm-hmm. That's a command, that's a desire for his people. And carrying on, not only in a cultural context, but literally because of Yahweh's intention for his people, the carrying on of your lineage was a big deal. It was an important thing. In addition to being fruitful and multiplying, literally because they were about to step into and take on this inherited land, this promised land, it was not just to, again, occupy space, but it was meant to expand, and it was meant to be a place of ongoing lineage. Okay. I want everybody to key in on the important phrase here, because it's mentioned at two different places in this portion. But here it says, so that the name of that deceased brother would not be blotted out. Mm-hmm. Okay. So remember that phrase, blotted out. Literally, this law, just from the research that I was able to do, talked about it being an unmarried brother that would perform the brotherly duty. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just this, again, excuse for polygamy and all this other stuff that our human tendencies would probably lead us to, but it was meant for like the carrying on of lineage in a certain way. I don't know how deep to go into this, because there was a lot in like the symbolism of this.
Well, I just, going back to Ruth, that's literally Ruth again. Mm-hmm. Probably we're like, see, I'm like kind of freaking out how much Ruth is like tied into this one, but that was what Boaz was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was filling in that role.
Right. Yeah.
And there was somebody who actually came before him who said, I don't want that, because then my name is not going to be known.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. That's good.
Yeah. So then the next section, cutting off of a woman's hand. Again, that was one of those ones where you probably would read over it and you probably would skim through it pretty quick and not go back to it. Right? I don't know the mental image that could come from reading that. Everybody's probably like, oh, I don't know what's going on here with whatever. So we can write it off and we can get rid of that, right? But the principle in this, I'll say, number one, not that I'm an expert on this, but the research that I was in, there was not like ever a literal recorded example of that situation happening. Mm-hmm. But the principle in it had to do, again, with this concept of fairness. And if somebody entered into a fight or a quarrel or an argument, whatever it was, and they like added an extra advantage, there was a level of unfairness there, but it also spoke to the retribution aspect of eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, and that fairness and that equal scale of justice that is not our natural human tendency, but it is rooted in Yahweh's system, that it has to do with the equal application of justice. Okay? So just keep that as the principle. Same thing with the next section that has to do with weights and measures. This both speaks to, again, this enduring concept of fairness and care for the disadvantaged. It also has to do with integrity and not lying to people, not pulling one over, and being in a place of fraudulence even when it comes to matters of dealing with people. It's also a critical matter for the stability of a society. Mm-hmm. I mean, Yahweh was literally preparing them to step into a level of governance over the land that he promised them.
Yeah.
And in order to do that, you couldn't just flippantly go in and try to run stuff on your own system. But he's giving instruction out of his own goodness to support the stability of a society and to further set his people apart from the surrounding world that in many ways was based in, I don't know the right term, but based in like a fraudulent or criminal style of leadership that had to do with trying to just climb your way through position and rule from that place, versus he's doing it the other way. So this is literally him safeguarding the economic sense of things, safeguarding the integrity of governance. This is a picture, again, of his justice, and in a modern context, has to do with our own system of scales and weights and measures. You go to a gas station, those things are regularly inspected because it's an important thing that the amount of gas that you pump in your car is accurate to the value of it. So again, these are enduring principles, right? Our justice system is also based on, again, that picture of Lady Justice holding the scales. And that's rooted in this as well.
Before you continue, I don't know if anybody's seeing Mon's comments on kingdom heirs, but hopefully we're like seeing some of those connections with Yeshua, like she had just mentioned, even just this last one with oh my God, what was the title of it? The portion where the brother takes on, like that is what we're afforded in Yeshua. So if we're reading through the Torah and that's one of those ones that just rubs you wrong, mm-hmm. or you're like weirded out, mm-hmm. there's something you're being afforded in that that isn't then understood.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to make sure that we're diving into that to really understand then what we're afforded, because we're not then tapping into it and we're not understanding a piece of his character.
Okay, so I'll get to the last section of this here, but again, just kind of briefly skimming through those and just kind of hitting the principles or the concepts behind it. Does everybody feel good about it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The final section of our Torah portion, which is only what? It's like two sentences. It's two verses, not sentences, but it's like two verses. Really is something that we want to be able to, again, from like a guardrail perspective, operating in a posture of remembrance, this is something that we really want to hone in on, knowing that, again, all these commandments and all these things that we've gone through are not something that we're just going to take and write off, but that we're going to seek to apply them, okay? Mm-hmm. The additional aspect of this that I think is for our family has to do with the final section of blotting out Amalek. Now, we've heard that name before. We've heard it in different scenarios, different situations. It's been literally a topic that has come up multiple times over multiple Torah portions. We know that Amalek was the grandson of Esau, so there's a lineage aspect there in the branching off of the nation of Israel, and then another group of people that were still inhabitants of the land, and there was conflict, and there's all these things going on in this historical context. But when it talks about Amalek, something I want us to be thinking about is Amalek is a symbol of total unfairness, ultimately like a root of evil. And when it talks about, and I'll come back to that, but when it says to literally, when it says to blot out, think of blotting out as the literal erasing of a name or the remembrance of that. So when it, again, referencing what we were just talking about with that kinsman redeemer, with that brother's duty, so that the name would not be blotted out. He obviously cares about lineage, mm-hmm. and he cares about a name being carried on.
Yeah.
In this context, we can see the severity of this, and we can see the weight behind this commandment to make sure that it is absolutely blotted out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Other translations for blot out are obliterate,
race, destroy. Like there's a weight to that, right? There's an intensity to that. And it's not just a like, well, they're not a problem anymore. Mm-hmm. Or it'll pop up every once in a while, but it's not that big a deal. But to blot out was a very different level of intensity. Amalek in these contexts symbolized the essence of the, like, an enemy of Israel. That's a broad term, but Amalek symbolizes the essence of this. Some interpretations and some resources will even say that it often represents the literal Antichrist spirit. Mm-hmm. I want to reference something that we as a house have confronted and mm-hmm. looked at before, which is in the portions going back to Exodus, when the Amalekites came up and they attacked the most vulnerable among those that were exiting Egypt. That again is literally like a picture of unfairness, a picture of the enemy of Israel to come and, while Yahweh's in all of his goodness safeguarding the most disadvantaged, vulnerable of all of us, and not forgetting that because we were once in that position, mm-hmm. this is the opposite spirit that goes and attacks those very things. Mm-hmm. Okay. In our own house, we've confronted this before, and we have to remember that. Mm-hmm. It's been brought up upon ourselves in different situations where we had to do, at the time, things that we talked about as a family had to do with infighting, concepts of unfairness, our own level of rebellion to certain instructions mm-hmm. and certain things that we were in. And this spirit of Amalek is something that we've had to look at and confront before and mm-hmm. continue to hold on to. Mm-hmm. So we're postured in remembrance of that as we read this, because it's very obvious, it's very important that it's coming up again.
Yeah.
I would even say the extension of that is even the timing of our mom and dad are not here right now. Mm-hmm. They're here with us, absolutely, but as a family, we're stepping into another level of ownership of all of these things, and we're now being confronted with this again.
Yeah.
Okay, so I want us to be thinking about that. In our house, as part of this 12-week, well, remaining 12-week preparation, last week it was 13, that we are to literally follow out this instruction in the sense that we are to blot out Amalek in us. Mm-hmm. If the spirit of Amalek is something that our family's been confronted in, we are now being asked to look at it again. Mm-hmm. Again, the timing of even this month, I didn't think about this, but the timing of this month says, look at it again. Mm-hmm. Mom has said, "There, wherever you go, there you are."
Yep. Mm-hmm.
We need to, we as a family will look at this again and blot out Amalek in us and any aspect of partiality, unfairness,
yeah.
whatever that is.
Yeah.
What I literally want to relate this to is Amalek again went after the weakest mm-hmm. of the group. The weakest of the people, right? This can be applied both personally and outward. In an outward sense, this can be applied to literally like outside forces of the world coming against our community. That's all something that we can probably pretty easily think about. There's enemies that we have. There's things that we're confronted in. There's whatever it is. We can think about those things probably in a literal sense, and we can work through that. But as we look at applying this on a personal level, something I feel Yahweh wants to speak over the family is that this has to do with our own sensibility, our own mm-hmm. tendencies, our own aspects of idolatry, the weakest parts of
yeah, that's
us.
Good. That's good, Jay. Mm-hmm.
If we are embodying his people, if you can put yourself in the place of picturing, I am a nation, and as I'm exiting systems, there are things that want to... The system now being that we're not exiting outside systems, but we're exiting ourselves. Mm-hmm. There are things that the enemy wants to attack that are the weakest in us,
yes.
the weakest parts of me,
yep.
so that it can continue to have a hold on
yep.
me fully getting out.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
So yep. when he brings this back up again and he says, blot out that name, that is the inspection process.
Yeah.
That is
That's
the exposure.
Good.
That
That's
is
good.
The discomfort. Mm-hmm. Blotting out the name of Amalek in us is this ongoing process that is really freaking hard right now.
Yep.
Because things are blowing up. She mentioned it earlier. I feel like I've known you my whole life, and we've been married 10 years, and these last 4 weeks is probably like the biggest blow up in our lives. Mm-hmm. But it's absolutely for the purpose of what he's highlighting here, in that Amalek in us, the thing that wants to attack the most vulnerable places in me, he's calling us to look at that
deal with it,
yeah.
blot it out so that it's not in your memory.
Yes.
And the extension of this mm-hmm. is that he actually further instructs, and you can see this literally traditionally over the hundreds and hundreds of years from that time period until modern tradition in a Jewish culture, that the it's a funny phrase and it may not make sense, but you have to choose to remember to forget.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that speaks to an active ongoing process of having to constantly look at
yes.
what comes up, what gets exposed,
yes.
what needs to be blotted out,
yeah.
and that we are continually to walk in a manner of remembering to forget that,
mm-hmm.
remembering to make sure that that's blotted out,
yes.
remembering to fill that space, allow that space in us to be occupied by Him, so that mm-hmm. that thing that's
yes.
blotted out doesn't
yep.
attack the weakest point in me
yep.
and just come right back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
okay?
That's really good.
Mm-hmm. This is absolutely a posture that he wants us to take as we move forward in these coming weeks and approach that deadline.
Mm-hmm.
Because this has to do with an inspection process. And if we're not postured properly in being able to see what he's asking of us in this, and removing ourselves from the cultural context of the portion and just thinking that, well, the Amalekites were a people group that existed, and it's not like there's no Amalekites right now. Okay. There absolutely is a spirit of Amalek that exists or that can have a hold in us if we don't continue to blot it out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
This is absolutely that continual process of daily inspection, allowing those things to be displaced, Yahweh to bring exposure because he knows about it, and sometimes we don't.
I also just wanted to add that, I mean, he touched on it, but it's not just the tangible piece of Amalek. It's not just the tangible thing that you could see, or like we can disassociate and think like, okay, it's like the people and their items, but he said to blot out the memory of Amalek. So it's not just like the physical, it's down to the thought process that he's after. It's not just the physical thing, but literally if we're exiting ourselves, there's an aspect of you have to literally be aware of your thoughts
yeah.
to be able to leave the system
yeah.
of Amalek
yeah.
and what is like holding you in that place. But you're remembering to forget. Another way of saying that is to blot out the memories, but not forget the lesson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what you're being taught, we're being intentional to remember the lesson and what he was teaching, while forgetting or blotting out the memory of what was that thing. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yes.
I also found it interesting because he treated this different than other battles, and I don't know if anybody like looked into like why Amalek. I mean, obviously they went after the vulnerable and the weak, which literally was like the infants, mm-hmm. the elderly,
yeah.
the youth, like those that couldn't keep up, those that were vulnerable, those who were susceptible, is who they went after. They didn't go for the leader. They didn't go to the front of the pack and do that even like a
it's the picture of Satan. He doesn't come in this bolstering, confrontational, like it goes after
it's
the
like this conniving
yeah.
little back door thing. So the posturing was to attack the weak and the vulnerable. But they, like another characteristic was that they were opportunistic rather than defensive.
Yeah.
They were seeking an opportunity. They were attacking things that weren't even attacking them. They were looking for opportunities
yeah.
to attack.
Yeah.
They directed it at the defenseless, and they carried it out without fear of God. They were persistent enemies, they were reoccurring conflict, and they were continual adversary. They came up over and over and over. They were a persistent issue through their history, through their lineage. There was something always that needed to be addressed with them. So going all the way back to the beginning of God protects the vulnerable from both foreign and domestic, It's literally the epitome of the opposite of what he's trying to teach us. They went after the weak, the widow, the orphan, the foreigner, the poor, while he's literally trying to teach us to cover them, to encourage them, to love them, to make a space for them, to come underneath them, to cover them. And this is what literally would attack them instead. So it's not just because they were enemies, but because they embodied the opposite of everything Yahweh was teaching them through the Torah.
I want to read something Mom just posted on King Nurse. And this is a literal application. A lot of us have been in this already, and if you're not, I want to read this. She said, thought life is being put on notice. And if you haven't been in it, here you go. So this blotting out of Amalek is getting so intricate and detailed that it's having to do with our thought life and being aware of what are we occupied by? What are we focused on? Even subconsciously that we don't know of and we're not aware of. What are we submitted to? What are we being, I said it already, but what are we being occupied by? And there's a level of detail that he's always intended for us, but that we're now being pressed to really look at as a family, and I want that to be the word over the house as we, and not that this is the word, I'm not making that a thing, but like if we could just take this portion as a literal activation point into the next coming weeks, and as this deadline approaches, that we're blotting that out in us, which has to do with our thought life and the things that are in us that are the most vulnerable, the most weak, that lend to us staying in a place. This is like a homework thing. I won't go into it, but there's some scriptural continuity. I would encourage everybody to read Titus 2, like the entirety of chapter 2.
That was part of the readings, but it was just a portion of it. The all of Titus 2 is a positioning for our family.
Alrighty. So moving into the tithe and offering portion. So going off tonight, this week's Torah portion is what we heard about tonight from the Abetas. Yahweh cares about every detail, created a system for us to operate in. The Torah portion is pretty, I'd say this one is pretty straightforward and literal to a large extent. Kidnapping, marriage, caring for the poor and orphans, widows, lending. Some of those basic fundamental things that govern our minds. Whoever gets caught up in clickbait on the internet, I do sometimes. And one of them I clicked on was like 25 interesting facts about your body that you can't unforget once you hear them. And I didn't forget all of them. I forgot some of them, but your immune system constantly patrols for and destroys cancer cells in your body. It's pretty interesting, pretty crazy. When you die, your immune system shuts down and your gut bacteria spreads throughout your organs and basically eats itself. Yeah, that's called putrefaction. The same gut bugs, what was it? The same gut bug, the gut microbiome influences mood through the microbiota gut-brain axis. Trillions of microbes in your digestive tract produce and regulate critical neurotransmitters, including an estimated 90% of the body's serotonin. So basically it controls your mood, that same. So it's just interesting how the same thing that is trying to eat you, but it's governed by your immune system that keeps it from doing that, also affects how you think. So there's a central authority within our body that keeps our body aligned and working towards a purpose or a goal. The goal is life. All this is happening within us, and we have nothing to do with it. We don't even know what's going on. I have a, you know, and then to think about it in the context of I have a power and control struggle with the one who created that. Mm-hmm. Like half the time I forget to zip up my fly. Well, like every time. And just, it's just, and thinking that I know better than the one that, that created that is just a interesting thought. He can make systems that operate without thought, without our minds, without us, that work like that. I guess just thinking about that, the point of it is just reinforces relationship and dwelling, that Yahweh is faithful. It's about thankfulness, gratitude, joy, dwelling, relationship, and righteousness, which is all of the things that we're learning about, you know, in our Torah, different Torah portions. And what does that have to do with tithe and offering? I think just as we give, being thankful and gratitude and joy that we, you know, have the opportunity to dwell and have a relationship, and that is the point. Kind of takes the pressure off not eating ourselves.